Can I talk football here for a minute?
Dave Wannstedt.
Dave Wannstedt has guided his Bears to the playoffs, and he knows what it takes to succeed.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here, and Dave Wannstedt, there's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
A superb game plan defensively by the Miami Hurricanes.
The party has begun in Miami.
Super Bowl champion.
They swarmed to the ball so incredibly. This speed-burning defense, number one in the NFL. Dave Wannstedt, the defensive coordinator.
Football analyst for Fox Sports and NBC Sports Chicago.
Dion wants to be called Coach Prime, but you call people who are not coaches coach. So what are we doing here?
When I get introduced, people say, what would you like me to call you? Dave, and I know they're not going to probably remember. On a golf course or something, they're not going to remember. I say, just call me Coach. It's simpler.
Coach, are you kidding me?
Dave Wannstedt.
You guys want to hear something funny?
When I'm coaching, right, everyone's calling me a moron. Now I get a microphone in front of me, everyone calls me an expert.
With Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Where the top of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Dave Wannstedt, kind enough to join us in our Hyundai Score studios, which is where we're broadcasting from each and every day. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers.
You're missing it, Danny. The bourbon, is here. He brought an enormous pile of bourbon, lots of bottles. It's been poured. It's been shared. I got, Coach, thank you. I have two bottles in my bag to bring home. Incredibly kind.
Hey, enjoy, Spig.
Thanks,
buddy. And Danny, boy, I got my tie on. I figured we'd come in here. We'd class this place up a little bit today.
Mm-hmm.
Sip on a little bit of Terry Bradshaw bourbon. Terry was nice enough, sent me a case yesterday. I don't know. You know, what are you doing? It's game week, and you're at home. Come on. You are soft.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe it. It's
totally
game
true.
Week, and you're taking a day off.
Totally fair.
Well, he's just dumber than a box of rocks, isn't he?
Terry Bradshaw. Terry's back with us.
Top rope.
I tell you, Danny, I hope it's not the Clemson loss. Is that why you're having issues at home?
I couldn't face you. I couldn't face you, Dave, after they only put up 3 points on Georgia. I am soft. You're right. I'm not football tough. And this would be my luck to miss the week. You finally pay up and bring in some alcohol for us, as opposed to us always supplying it to you every damn week.
I'm going to be honest with you. I am drinking Iron City Light for anybody out there from Pittsburgh that's tuning in. In fact, I got to get a hold of Tony Ferrero. He was my contact back there. He used to be a big...
Jewish guy, Tony Ferrero?
Yeah, Tony Ferrero from Pittsburgh. Works at Iron City Beer. Used to. I got to see if he's still with them. But this is refreshing. Trust me. The day I had this kind of caps it off, you know?
Oh, yeah. Wani had to film a TV show a little earlier than expected, so that's a brutal day.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it must be so hard to be you, Coach.
Hey, you know, in that introduction, that last line, people don't have any idea what that was, but that's when I was on Chicago Fire, remember, a couple years ago, that moron, now I'm a coach, and everybody's laughing. I just got a check from them for like $8. So they, you know what? They must have had it on a rerun somewhere.
Like, yeah, for you, you're getting residual.
Is that what it's called?
Yep, mailbox money.
That was kind of nice. It came in, and I thought Mitch was giving me a bonus here at the station.
That does sound like a radio bonus.
Yeah, $8. There you go.
Talk to your guy Terry Bradshaw about residuals. I can't turn on my TV without seeing him.
Well, I'm going to see him tomorrow. I fly to LA tomorrow, and we have a big get together with both crews, and then. We kick it off on Sunday morning.
There you go,
Dave. Let me ask you a question. Speaking as your friend and your agent, when do you get the Jimmy Johnson private jet treatment? Why you still got to fly first class out to LA? When are they going to send the plane around for you?
Well, you know what, Jimmy Johnson is flying commercial. If you want to know the truth, he had the private plane, and I was riding with him, and it was too damn expensive. To fly from. Private, what did he tell me? From Miami to L.A. for the weekend with pilots and, you know, everything that goes along with it. It was almost like $40,000 a trip.
Oh, man.
He said he was working for nothing. Seriously. So,
So he's slumming it commercial.
Yeah, he got rid of his plane and... So he's like the rest of us, you know?
Well, I'm glad that he included in the budget for that private flight the pilots. Because the plane without the pilots doesn't really accomplish all that much.
I know.
But... I want to start the conversation.
I hope you're going to start with Bears. I mean,
I was thinking
there
Bears.
Is a game this week.
Sunday night. There's a big one tonight and then a whole pile of them before Sunday.
That's right.
But we're fixated in this town for sure.
I got you.
And Dave, we've talked a lot about quarterbacking with you. We've talked a lot with you about the tackle situation. I personally think in this specific game, and it'll be a storyline all year long, but the Bears' cornerback situation, specifically their nickel corner situation, there might not be a tougher matchup in the entire league to not have your nickel corner figured out for than in L.A. on the fast track with Cooper Kupp, who is maybe the best slot guy in the entire league. How can you help? I know how you can help a tackle, right? You keep a running back in to help, or you a tight end in on the line or whatever. How do you help a slot corner against a guy like Cooper Kupp?
Well, it depends. You can play zone coverage, which means he's always going to have some help over the top or inside. I mean, you could double him up. You could actually legitimately give him some help. You know, and I don't know if, you know, and Johnson's not experienced enough, but, you know, I mean, I've had players. I mean, well, going back when I was at the Dolphins and we had two Pro Bowl corners, Sam Madison and Patrick Surtain, you know, Patrick could go play the slot. So if we got into a situation where that's where we were in a mismatch, we would put our best player in there. Darrell Revis did that. I know at the Jets some, and he did that when I had him at the University of Pittsburgh. So Johnson's not there yet. I think he's a young enough player, but he has the ability to take away. But these guys have more than one weapon, so it's going to put a lot of stress on him. There's no question, and he's keep him out of those short yardage situations because Cooper Kupp, as you mentioned, he is most dangerous in that range, that third down and 4, 5, or 6 range. You know, when the ball's going to come out quick, he's going to run the quick little option route and get open and make the catch. So the key is, obviously, to try to get him in some long yardage situations, and that would definitely help. So it's going to put the burden on the defense a little bit.
Bears coaches, be it Sean Desai or position guys, Deshaun Townsend, Matt Nagy, et cetera, not wanting to give up who won the nickel job. Is there any advantage? Like, is there if you're an offensive coach, do you know enough about specific nickel corners to have broken down their tendencies in preseason?
Well, you would, yes. I mean, you would know, is the guy a physical player as compared to a finesse player? Stuff like that, you know? But, no, I think I heard Big Z this morning on the morning show. He said something like having two nickel cornerbacks is like having two quarterbacks. You know, you might not have any, you know, so that's, we'll have to wait and see. There are some unknowns. And you know, the other thing too, with Johnson last year, you have Kyle Fuller, right? You got Kyle Fuller, who is a Pro Bowl corner, and people aren't going to try to throw the ball on Kyle Fuller or any great player. They're going to go after the young kid. So last year, Johnson played outstanding, and he had a lot of balls thrown his way, and he rose to the occasion. So now, all of a sudden, if you're playing the Bears, McVay's going to look out there and say, okay, Johnson's on this side. He might be the guy that we avoid and go the other way. So it really shifts a lot of the responsibility, a lot of the burden onto your lesser players, whether it be ability or inexperience. So it'll be interesting to see how they try to attack them Sunday night.
If you were game planning against the Rams, like using the Bill Belichick school of thought of, you know, whatever they do best, try to take it away. You know, they have a new quarterback there with Matt Stafford, but obviously the Bears and the Rams have played each other 3 years in a row at this point. They know the personnel pretty damn well. What would you be trying to take away?
It starts to me with Stafford. It starts to me truly with the quarterback, and you got to decide if you're going to pressure him or if you're going to defend him. And the good news is that the Bears, they should know, you know, because of Stafford obviously being at Detroit, the Bears have faced him. Forget about the other surrounding cast, but they have faced him personally, you know, twice a year. So they know his strengths and his weaknesses. Which way does he like to scramble when he does get forced out of the pocket? How can he throw across his body? How does he throw the deep ball as compared to all these things? And so that would be my starting point as far as what I would focus on from a defense. And then from there, You know, they mix it up. That's one thing about the Rams offense. I mean, Sean McVay does a great job of he's going to throw to the open guy, you know. So, and they like to run the ball. When the Rams were most successful and went to the Super Bowl, it was really the Todd Gurley offense. And for our listeners, Todd Gurley was their running back at the time. And everything started with him, and then it moved out. So now they got Sonny Michel, you know, the running back that they acquired. Is he going to be the guy? I assume so. It'll be real interesting to see, does this offense, Rams offense, start with Sonny Michel in the running game like it did with Gurley, or are they just going to go right to throwing the football and open this thing up?
Darrell Henderson still their number one, I think, but Sonny
Michel.
Who's
a good player? Who's a good player?
I know you like Michel. He's got a lot more speed, and we'll see how they end up using him. Bears injuries got updated today. Eddie Goldman apparently tweaked his knee on Monday in practice and is day to day. They scrambled like crazy, signed two guys to the practice squad.
Yeah, I don't like the vibe at all.
That's what I'm saying. It's like all of a sudden there was rumors circulating yesterday. Two quick practice squad. Signings yesterday, both for interior linemen, and now Eddie, we don't believe that he wasn't sure whether he was going to practice today. We don't know that definitively just yet. But that's scary. I know they have depth there, but why is Goldman special, and why is it super important if he's not there?
Well, I him and Akeem Hicks. I mean, Akeem Hicks can rush the passer, and he's a unique defensive tackle. Most defensive tackles are just, you know, fill up the gaps and control the line of scrimmage. Keem Hicks and Goldman, these two guys are athletic enough that they're going to take care of the run, and they really give those linebackers a chance. And with Danny Trevathan out, you know, they really give your linebackers a chance to run to the football more freely, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year, you know, they filled in with defensive linemen when Goldman wasn't there. But, I mean, this guy is, not only does he have the size physically, he's also got the athleticism, in my opinion, to dominate in there, really. And, God, I hated hearing that, because I was really excited to see what he would bring to this defense, because they're going to have to rely on this defense early. I mean, they, you know, to win this football game, in my opinion, they have got to get this game into the fourth quarter. You know, they cannot get into a shootout with the Rams on the road, out there on Sunday night. That's not the way I would see playing this game. So they've got to try to keep it close. And how do you keep it close? You help your defense by running the ball, not having negative plays from your quarterback or running backs, but also you got to play high-level defense. And that's I don't want to say it's a question, because I love the defense. I think they're a top 10 defense, but – those guys are going to have to really show up in a big way.
What do you know and like about Sean Desai?
Well, that he's studied under Vic Fangio, you know, and I got all the respect in the world for Vic Fangio. Always have, known him a long time. So I think that he's a smart guy. I think that he understands not just the X and O's. And here's what separates coaches, and this is what we got to see. Okay, there's when I would hire coaches, I would always kind of put them into categories, and maybe I'm talking in broad terms here, but there were always playbook coaches and there were outside the box coaches, and bear with me here. And playbook coaches were those guys that came out of a good system, and they knew that playbook inside and out. And whatever that playbook said, if they did this, the playbook, you turn the next page and the playbook said, this is what we're going to do. And those guys are valuable. And probably 80% of the coaches in this league are kind of playbook coaches. And that's good. That's what you have on your staff nucleus. But then you got to have some outside-the-box thinking coaches. And what those guys are doing, they're always thinking of something that might happen, and if we got to make this adjustment, this is how we're going to do it. And you don't really know if coordinators are at that level and can do that until they really get in the battle. So we're going to find out this game probably, you know, at halftime, you know, where we're at. Can we make some adjustments to come out the second half and play better defense? And you know, I don't know right now, but I like everything about him. He's a smart guy. The players seem to like him, which is a key. You want your players supporting you. Now we got to go get results, guys.
So are those outside the box coaches welcomed? Are they more welcomed now than maybe they were in football 20 years ago? Desai's a unique guy. He's got a few different degrees. He's the reputation is cerebral, yada, yada. But, like, when football guys are hanging around, are you open to some of that outside-the-box stuff, or is it scary?
No. I always liked having one or two guys like that, to be honest with you. You know, and they were, you know, but at some point you got to get in a stance and line up, right? And get off a block. So you know, to get a guy that really understands the game and is always thinking for the next possibility or thinking a little bit ahead of the situation, that's special. And let's hope that he is one. You know, that Coach Sanai is one of those guys. And we'll have to see. But I just don't know right now. I haven't seen him operate under pressure.
At some point, you got to get in a stance, Danny. Some point.
Yeah, Danny. You know, hey, Danny, I'm glad you're not. If I was Andy Dalton and you were coaching the offensive line this week, I would be scared to death, by the way.
Why is that, Coach?
Hoping that the Bears get slaughtered so they can go with Justin Fields. That's your theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're the line coach and I'm Andy Dalton, and you're drawing up pass protections, how much confidence am I going to have in that?
How does that feel?
I don't expect you to understand, Dave. You never had a quarterback, so you don't know what it's like. What it's like.
No, it's a big topic around the station
this
week.
That's my wife's line. Come on.
It's a big topic around the station this week. It's like Danny is doing what a lot of new school football thinkers are doing, is valuing the quarterback above everything else on the roster, above the advancement of everything else. Like, if you get more out of the quarterback this year in terms of development, right, Fields, that it's more important than the whole rest of the team even winning or developing. That makes sense on paper, but how does that feel as a football guy to hear people talking about it like that?
Yeah, I'm not that way. I mean, you try to win every game, you know? I mean, that's the mentality. I mean, these players are out there to win. The fans, I don't care what you say, they want to win. And if they win this game with Andy Dalton, there'll be a completely different attitude around this team, I promise you. And not around the team, but probably around the city. Mm-hmm. And right now there's been so much controversy and so many opinions that, I'll be honest with you, there's not the buzz that I would like to feel walking down Michigan Avenue. You know, I mean, there was a different buzz a month ago, and I think everybody was expecting Justin Fields to be the guy, and here we go, and we're off to the Super Bowl, and on and on and on. And that's not the way it's worked out to this point. And, you know, I think we got to give it some time. We got to go out and do what we can do to try to win this football game.
And I do not expect the players or the coaches to
try to win.
No, of course they're going to try to win. I'm saying they're not going to have the mindset that I'm having with it. But I keep using the Chargers, but I don't think I've ever asked you the example, Dave. The Chargers last year,
mm-hmm,
their plan was, let's play Tyrod Taylor.
Yep.
Let's not play the sixth pick in the draft.
Yep.
They played Tyrod Taylor the first week. They won the game. Then before the second game, gave him an injection, accidentally punctured his lung. Herbert comes in, rest is history. He starts the rest of their games. They only win six of them, so they finished the season with 7 wins, missed the playoffs, obviously had a bunch of injuries last year, lost a lot of one-possession games, fired their coach. But Justin Herbert set the rookie record for passing touchdowns in a season, had 31 of them,
yep,
and won Offensive Rookie of the Year. So which – and now the Chargers know that Herbert's the guy. They spent this entire – they hired a new coach for him. They signed Corey Linsley, the center, to build around him, the whole thing. They know what they have at quarterback because of last year, but they missed the playoffs. But the Bears made the playoffs. They won more games than the Chargers. But they did it with quarterbacks who are not on the roster and are not a part of building towards the next great team.
Correct.
Which team had the more successful season last year, the Chargers or the Bears?
You know,
Bears made the playoffs, Chargers didn't, but the Chargers found their quarterback.
Yeah, and let's see what he does this year. I'm assuming, and I'm a Justin Herbert fan, trust me. So I'm a fan of his, but he's got to show me that he can do it this year, and it wasn't a one-year wonder. And if he does come back this year and he takes another step, then I would tell you that was the right decision, and that's where you'd want to be. You know, but, you know, I don't know. All these hypotheticals, I don't know. I don't know.
I get it. I get it. I know it's not how football coaches are wired to think. Right. I get it. But I do think it's how general managers should be wired to think.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm looking at the Bears more than Justin Fields. I want to see what our I'm looking to see what our identity is going to be. You know, if we're going to be a good football team, Justin Fields is not going to come in and just be the savior of this thing. I mean, to do what? How are you going to use him? What are we going to do? And I think that's what I'm more interested in that. I want to see what we come out with and how what Matt puts together on offense and what and how we're going to run the ball, what and how we're going to play action pass, what we're going to do with receivers, tight ends, all these tight ends that we got. That's what I'm interested in seeing. David Montgomery, how much of a player he's going to be. And then once we say, okay, boy, here's our identity, this is what we're going to do, now, boy, you plug in, if it's Justin Fields, you feel that much better. If we come out and we're all over the place on offense, Justin Fields, in my mind, he's not going to come in and make that big of a difference. I really don't think so.
So I'll give you the other example that I've been using. I used it earlier today was Russell Wilson. He came in Legion of Boom, right?
Yep.
They're known for their defense. Now it's let Russ cook and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and throwing the ball all over the field.
And they're not as good. They're good when Chris Carson's running the ball. That's when Seattle is the best.
But never had a losing season.
To Danny's point, they still win. It's like Brady coming in as a caretaker for a defense and an overall team. And by the end, it's Brady explosive in New England, right,
Russ
Danny?
Has never had a losing season. Like, correct. To me, the way that you win consistently year over year in the NFL is finding the quarterback.
No question about that. No, I totally agree with you. And I don't know. I guess I just... And I'm a Justin Fields fan, but I think Andy Dalton's a lot better than what people are giving him credit for. It's all a matter of what we're going to do. What are we going to do with these guys, and how are we going to try to maximize their ability? That's the key in my mind.
And there's an impact of winning, which we should talk about on the other side. Like what happens in a locker room and in a facility when a team is actually winning? Because I don't think that gets discussed in that context.
We'll pick up the conversation there, and then a couple of big picture NFL stuff around the rest of the league with Dave Wanstead. And we just got word that one of the best broadcasters in the business, Kevin Harlan, is going to join us at 5:00. It's Parkinson Spiegel.
Kevin Harlan.
Dave Wanstead with Parkinson Spiegel.
And I'm always available unless I'm doing something.
On 670 The Score.
Where the bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Kevin Harlan will join us at 5:00. Dave, you seemed very excited by that announcement.
Brian Harlan is my guy, obviously. He handles all my business stuff. So I know Kevin and I know the Harlan family, Mr. and Mrs. very well. Great people.
We want to stick around for the interview?
I might. You got any more beer?
We always have more beer. Yeah, Danny, it's time to tell the truth about something. There's no bourbon. We're just messing with you.
I figured it out.
But I do have bourbon at home. Terry.
Yeah, I know, because you don't share.
No, it came yesterday.
Yeah, okay.
What are you, a bourbon detective? How'd you figure out there's no bourbon? Are you looking on Twitch? Is that what you're doing?
I could look into your eyes. I can't wait to get back at a poker table with you, Speaks. I see right through you.
Oh, my God. That's a terrible, terrible thing to say.
Dave, the bourbon came yesterday, but you're here today.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
What the hell, dude?
I know. Well, I was busy today, and I couldn't carry it over. You know, I mean, I'll bring some next week.
I will
bring some next week. Tony Wise is coming in town in 2 weeks.
Oh, there you go. So you got to save half a case for that.
I might bring Tony by the show, you know?
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Definitely.
I remember that every sack is a specific occurrence.
I will be in studio if you bring Tony Wise some bourbon. I promise you that.
So we were talking about how the priority is to win because you're thinking about everybody on the team and not just the quarterback, obviously. And it seems basic. But, like, what happens with a team if you win, if Nagy goes out and gets a win and some of the stuff that he's been trying to do actually works, like what's the effect around the room and on the practice field after that?
Well, obviously a big confidence, a big shot in the arm, you know, of confidence. And and let's go get two. We got one. You know, let's get another win. This was if they can win this game on the road against a team that a lot of people have winning not just a division but in the NFC Championship, the Rams, that is. I mean, that would be a huge boost for them going forward. And you know, and then all of a sudden everybody backs away from the quarterback discussions and it becomes a whole different vibe in the city.
The rest of the league, obviously, you know, we've done a ton of Bears here, Dave, but it kicks off tonight with Bucks and Cowboys. I know your connection to the Cowboys franchise, but also the Tampa franchise with your guy Bruce Arians down there. This is a rare one. Like, a Super Bowl champion bringing back every starter is very, very difficult to do. If you were going to say this is the flaw of Tampa Bay, this is their weakness, what is it?
Wow. If it wasn't for Tom Brady, you know, usually when a team wins a championship, and I've been fortunate, I've been around a couple of them, college and NFL, two things happen. Number one, complacency could set in. Or number two, the mentality of I'm not getting my share, whether it be monetary, whether it be recognition, whatever it might be, is that I'm getting slighted. So those two things can creep in. the intangible that the Bucks have, and my nephew, you know, who was at the Bears for 14 years, is the head trainer down there. And he tells me that when Tom walks in the building, everybody is, I don't want to say on eggshells, but everybody is kind of got their game face on, whether it be players, trainers, equipment guys, everybody. So, I mean, Tom Brady is the way his DNA is, it's not going to let you be complacent. And I do think that when you have success, everybody can benefit. So there's a lot of these players that might not be getting contracts with the Bucs in the future, but if the team continues to have success, everybody wants these type of guys on your team. So that's where they need to keep their focus. As far as weaknesses, Danny, I can't name a weakness. Wow. That would be the top two possibilities, but I don't see that happening. I think Brady has too much that he wants to accomplish, and he is the leader on that team. There's no question about that.
Pretty remarkable when your quarterback has that kind of work ethic and can just create the culture that permeates the whole damn room.
I remember talking to Deion Lewis when Deion was playing for the Patriots. You know, he played for me at Pitt, and we were talking. I said, tell me about Tom. He says, all I can tell you, when I signed here as a free agent coach and we had our first day of offseason workouts, the first guy that was running through the bags was Tom Brady. He said, when I saw that, I knew I better buckle my chin strap because this is a different place.
You think Jameis Winston is going to get right under Sean Payton, having had a year
I hope so.
Having had a year to watch it function really well with Payton and Breeze, playing well in these tiny little stints, getting this vote of confidence in a system he knows for an offense that has produced for feels like decades. It seems to make sense that he's going to have a return to prime.
I think it's going to help him because Sean Payton runs a different offense than Bruce Arians does. Bruce is a big push it down the field guy, throw it deep. You know, that's just what he believes in. And Sean is more of a, because of Drew Brees, I think, you know, he's more of a control passing game. Alvin Kamara, their running back, he could be their leading receiver and it wouldn't bother anybody down in New Orleans. And they throw the tight ends a lot, on and on and on. So I think these type of throws will really help Jameis Winston because he can make quicker decisions. You can get the ball out quicker. As far as athletic ability, this kid's got plenty of ability. And obviously, you know, there's a little bit of a paper trail of him doing some silly things from his college days on. You really got to believe, give him the benefit of the doubt that he has matured and now he's had an eye-opener, getting released, being on the street, and now he gets another you know, chance at a new situation that he's going to take advantage of it. So I'm going to be positive with him. I'm going to be upbeat with him. And see if he can do it.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, Dave, news today. Yeah. broke organizational history and protocol, did a contract early for T.J. Watt, made him the highest-paid defensive player in the NFL, said we're not going to make him go through the franchise tag process, gave him $80 million guaranteed on a four-year deal, biggest defensive contract ever. I mean, he's obviously an incredible player. Do you think that that was the right move for the Steelers?
Well, I think the biggest thing that came out of that with the Steelers was not the amount of money, but the guaranteed money, which you said. And if you said that was guaranteed, because they would give the signing bonuses. Their history has been,
right,
whatever you get for the signing bonus, that's yours. But the rest of the money, you got to earn it every
year.
Yeah,
guaranteed it. They guaranteed it for everything. They guaranteed it for injury. They guaranteed a full $80 million guaranteed on a four-year deal.
Well, that is coming out of the box for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'll tell you what, you know, great for obviously for the player, any player. But the negative is that now the organization. The next guy is going to want the same thing. And the next guy.
Minka Fitzpatrick next year.
And the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. So, you know, once you do that, you kind of set a precedent, and now you got to live with that. So we'll see what happens. But they need him. And, you know, Big Ben was talking about him. So, you know, I kind of figured it was going to get done, but I didn't know the numbers, and I did not expect him to guarantee the thing. So that is very, very unusual.
You know the only guy with as many sacks as T.J. Watt over the last 4 years in the NFL?
Aaron Donald.
Of course.
Is that who it is?
That is correct.
I was just,
Those are the two guys. One on the edge, then one absolute beast in the middle.
Yeah, that which is so crazy. For Aaron Donald to be talking about sacks,
that doesn't
happen.
No.
When we used to play Reggie White, you know, when he was at Philadelphia, he would move to in Green Bay. He would move to the defensive end to get his sacks. You know, even though he got some inside, I'm not saying that, but it was very difficult, even for Reggie. You know, when he moved outside, it became a whole different game for him. So, for Aaron Donald to do that, wow, it's crazy. Yep.
Dave, save some bourbon out of that case for us next week. Okay, don't drink it all in opening week.
No guarantees, but I'll try. Okay.
If you need help carrying something from your car.
I mean, bringing one bottle in, okay?
Danny will be here next week.
We're going to go two fingers in a glass. One bottle's coming in. This is not going to be Danny, you guzzling it, and then Spiggs and I have to do the rest of the show, okay?
So that's fine.
I'm going to pour, and that's the end of it.
Okay. We will have some Bradshaw bourbon next week in studio. Dave, safe travels to L.A. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
I think it's going to be like bumping Matt Damon. Like Bradshaw bourbon is just going to be a thing that gets talked about.
No.
Never actually happens.
He's going to deliver.
Okay.
He better deliver. Kevin Harlan at 5 o'clock. We'll get a little bit more insight into the Bears' defense next on The Score.
Well, I've got some good practice at chess because I play with my kids. So that's been a benefit for me. But that's always part of the game, right? Whether you're a position coach and you're helping the coordinator and the play caller see what you're seeing in the game, and then now as a play caller, you got to continually stay on top of it. And I think, you know, I think that's a strength of mine. You know, and we're going to see how it tests out on game day, but I think a strength of mine is to be able to see the game up top.
That's Sean Desai, Bears defensive coordinator. We'll talk to Kevin Harlan, who's on the call for Westwood One tonight. Not a bad gig for Kevin Harlan. Does Bucks and Cowboys on the radio, and then we'll do Patriots and Dolphins on CBS on Sunday. But Sean Desai is an interesting guy, very smart on the Vic Fangio tree. He did one preseason game from the sideline, and I think two from the booth up top. And he's decided to call plays from up top this year, but we want to get to know him about him a little bit here in a second.
Yeah, I mean, like Khalil Mack has talked about him as like a bookish dude, but he's cool at the same time. And, you know, and talking to Wani about his outside the box coaches and playbook coaches, and you know how this works around the NFL. If you're going to be cerebral and weird, you got to also be tough and get ready to be in that put a hand on the ground, Danny.
Yeah, get in a stance.
Get in a stance. Take your
That's
books.
Right.
Put them down in a stance.
Well, here I was reading an article today about my guy Brandon Staley, and they were talking about the way to do it now is it's all about every play you show some sort of coverage, some sort of look, and then you got to change it post-snap. Whatever you show pre-snap can't be what you do post-snap, and it's got to be death by 10,000 cuts. that if a team is going to be disciplined and execute well enough to move the ball down the field 4 yards at a time against you, fine, tip your cap, move on to the next series. But eventually they'll take their shot. Eventually they'll go for something bigger than that. They'll get impatient, and that's when you pounce and capitalize on their mistake. We'll see if Sean Desai, what exactly his defense is going to look like. He's got a lot of problems in the secondary. He addressed, though, this week, the nickel corner situation as it pertains to his roster and the matchup with the Rams.
Now, we'll see in a short time anyways who's going to play that. But how critical is a nickel? Oof. I mean, you guys run the numbers. 78% of the snaps in the league are nickel. So nickel is a critical position, and not just versus Sean McVay's offense, versus every offense. You know, because at the end of the year, when you run the numbers, you're playing about 70% nickel snap. So that position's a starter on your team. And so it's a critical position, and as it is for our defense and every other defense in the league. So it's going to be important. We like the competition that we built there, and we like the guys that we'll be marching out there with on Sunday.
For a veteran defense, that's kind of an X factor, right? I mean, really?
Yeah, you know,
proven spot?
Well, you know, it's... We got to be mindful, right? It's still one of 11 guys on the field. So it is one factor, but it's 1/11th of the factor. You know, there's still 10 other guys that can become X factors in a positive or negative way, too. And that's the thing that we're trying to preach, is being a great 11.
That number is just so interesting, and we've talked about it for years. Like, as the NFL's gone to more of a passing league, that means that for all the time we talk about a guy like Danny Trevathan, just to put a name to it, we should be talking more about a guy like Buster Skrine. You know, like Duke Shelley, Kendall Vildor, Artie Burns. Like, we'll see what it ends up being this year. But I'm talking about nickel corners of Bears past and this team. Like, we talk a lot about the tackler, the inside backer. But really, it's more likely that you'll have Roquan out there. You'll have Khalil out there in a clear passing down, right? You'll have Robert Quinn out there. And then have your couple of linemen, and the rest of them are going to be defensive backs. Like, that's really the makeup of your defense. So if you're weak at, it's why I say I'd rather have a stud corner than a stud edge rusher, because you just need more of them to be great, because you're playing so many of them on the field at once. You need guys that you can really count on.
I love when I learned that the nickel meant there are 5 defensive backs, and that the dime means there are 6. So that's having 2 nickels out
Brett
there.
Brett Favre learned that late in his career.
That's right. He didn't know what it was.
There's a great story. I think it was a Hasselbeck who said it. And he was in a meeting room, and he like clearly looked confused as to what they said, nickel or whatever. And he was like, they said it's when the linebacker comes off and a corner comes on. He goes, oh, why don't you just say that? He's like, he did.
Yeah.
Said it's a nickel.
It's possible there's some people in our audience who just enjoyed that being whiteboarded for the very first time in their life. You never know.
Sure. But they're most likely in our audience, they're not Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
It's possible. I don't know. Len Dawson used to be a big fan, I know.
Oh, sure.
Before he passed.
Nice.
Who else? Montana listens, I think, from time to time. It's a Hall of Famer. I bring that up because they might be in the dime. They might play in the dime a bunch. There could be 6 corners. Or 6 defensive backs, I should say, out there with 4 corners out there. I mean, it depends what Sean McVay starts doing to them. Now, Sean McVay's whole thing used to be everything looks the same. When he broke through as a head coach and offensive coordinator, he was single running back, big offensive line, right? And
yeah, three receivers and a tight end.
Receivers and a tight end, and every play came out of the same formation, and you couldn't figure it out. What it was.
Having Todd Gurley.
Yeah, it sure did. And a real good offensive line that ran it very well. And he did all these sort of waggles and play action stuff. That started to get figured out more. And McVay has become more flexible. Last year, he started lining up at a lot more 12 personnel with 2 tight ends and doing a little bit more and changing things up in the backfield and stuff like that. I don't know exactly what we're going to get from him offensively. This is the exciting part of week 1, is that they've had 8 or 9 days privately to work on this stuff. Like, if there's a Justin Fields package that Nagy has in, they've put it in the last 8 or 9 days, and we don't know exactly what it is, and we don't know exactly what McVay's going to do schematically. So there'll be a lot of, like, scrambling for fans and media alike in the first few series of all these games, including Bears-Rams, like, oh, okay, they're doing this, they're doing that, they're doing this, they're doing that.
We don't know, but it does seem likely, given, you know, injury to starting running back for the Rams and acquisition of Matt Stafford, seems fairly likely that it'll be more of a pass-oriented attack this year. Now, you still need to run the ball. I'm not saying they won't, but I would be very surprised if the Rams came out and tried to, like, pound the rock against the Bears' front seven, given how weak the Bears are in the secondary and how this is by far the best quarterback Sean McVay's ever had to run his offense.
I think that's absolutely true. But we also don't know schematically what's that going to look like. Like, what formation that's going to come out of and how that's going to mess with the minds of Alec Ogletree and Eddie Jackson and Akeem Hicks and guys trying to figure that stuff out.
I'm just saying, most likely it'll be as many pass catchers on the field as possible to put as many defensive backs on the field as possible, because that's a weakness for the Bears and it'll maximize targets for Stafford. But you're right. Like, is he going to do more with tight ends or how many or backs out of the backfield? You're right. But man, Stafford and Sean McVay, it's why so many people are picking the Rams.
He's never been well coached. He's put up all these incredible numbers, lived up to number one overall draft pick status, like climbed up leaderboards with counting stats and rate stats alike, frankly, and he's never been well coached. It's crazy.
You're exactly right. Longtime Stafford guy, and I think he's going to do absolutely incredible things, frankly, starting Sunday night. Kevin Harlan, his voice just screams big game. Cannot wait to talk to him about tonight, the return of the NFL, broadcasting Kevin Harlan next on The Score.